on a dark city street and you're holding the, this torch with the fire on it. Mm-hmm. And, but it's kind of behind you. So like everyone behind you sees the light, but you're kind of like still in this murky darkness, trying to figure out the path. And that's how I feel a lot of the time. You know, it's like I have to do the best that I can to like illuminate the path behind me so that the folks that work for me and with me can sort of join me. But I'm constantly trying to make shapes out of darkness.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. This is a show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. You know, whether it's mountain biking with a client or enjoying craft beer with colleagues at the office, my guests know that business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and newsletter subscriber sign up are all available at proco360.com. Subscribe to the podcast via your app. Just search ProCo 360. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Lee Mayer, co-founder and CEO of Havenly. Havenly is an online interior design service and home decorating discovery engine. Havenly calls itself your design BFF. I've tried out the site and can say that yes, it's really engaging. Lee, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Yeah, and we're going to dive in just a minute. First, I want to thank the show's sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for Colorado entrepreneurs. And also MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. All right, Lee, are we ready?
Here we are.
All right, let's jump in. Hey, I want to say first to the listeners that Lee was recommended by several past guests, including some pretty significant players in the Colorado entrepreneurial world, Krista Morgan, P2P investor, Greg Greenwood, a Blackstone Entrepreneurs Network. You know, I'm glad, Lee, that you are finally on the show.
So am I.
Yeah, so how about a quick overview of Havenly from the co-founder and CEO's perspective?
Sure. So Havenly is intended to be the easiest way to decorate your home. So the whole idea is you come online, you take a style quiz that helps us match you with a couple of our designers. You choose the one you like the best. And you work with them for a very quick, light touch experience where they completely design your home. You get a lot of input as well, of course, if you want to give us some. And then you can buy everything from the design directly through us. So we work with something like 400 vendors.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I will share with listeners. I mean, I went to your website and I got to give you kudos because it was the first time I'd gone and was really actually pretty drawn in this whole notion of find your style, take the style quiz. And what's really cool is you go through the process. It's really kind of fun. Pick the room you like, which ones you think. And then in order to get your style, you register.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty cool mechanism, right?
Yeah. We think a lot about how we can get people engaged with the service. We're really trying to effectively change behavior. I mean, so we're targeting people that aren't really looking for interior designers, but are potentially thinking about doing it themselves, or they're in the process of doing it themselves and they're somewhat frustrated. So we're trying to basically create a turnkey approach to getting this all done. And, our whole thought is like, we're your friend in this. Sometimes it can be lonely. Who do you talk to? Like maybe your husband or wife doesn't want to talk about it anymore.
I've never been lonely about interior design, but I don't know that I'm really your audience
specifically.
It was kind of fun though, actually, to be on there and to check out the rooms and see where I fit. And by the way, my initial draft was that I'm a farmhouse style with transitional influence, whatever that means.
Is that true? Are you one?
Maybe. I kind of like the kind of that little casual thing. But anyway, so, but that interactivity I found to be really pretty impressive. Has it been effective in generating registered users for the site?
Yeah, so we actually spend a lot of time on that funnel. So we think about, we A/B test a ton of things, and I have an incredible product team and development team that's great at building kind of cool tools to make it, again, more engaging. And so we change it up a bit, you know, and every single time we're pretty disciplined about trying to understand what drives more engagement, more registration, more payments, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You must measure first visitors against registration, right?
We measure pretty much everything, I think. Yeah.
Well, We're going to come back, I think, a little bit to that.
When
I think about your business, though, I think about these all these exciting companies that are disrupting marketplaces.
Yeah.
And you think about, you know, disrupting traditional business models.
Yeah.
And I've had past guests. I mentioned Krista Morgan, but also like Rod Buescher, Blinker. Mm-hmm. I've had from real estate, Josh Hunt, who's got Trey Laura.
Uh-huh.
You know, some
I'm
of
using
these people.
Trey Laura, by
you are. Very good. So see, these disruptive tech-enabling technologies is pretty cool. And so when you started Havenly, were you trying to disrupt a market?
I wasn't. I think, honestly, I was just trying to find something that served my own needs. So Havenly was born out of a, you know, my own personal desire to basically decorate my home.
Yeah.
I am not an interior designer. I don't even play one on TV. I just, you know, and for me, it was like, it was just so frustrating. I remember being in this moment where I was sort of ready to spend a few thousand dollars on my home, but I just couldn't get there.
Yeah,
and no
yeah.
one was helping me because I wasn't at a high enough end of the market where interior designers found me appealing.
Yeah. Or where you wanted to hire one either.
Or,
right?
Yeah, and I kind of didn't want to hire. I didn't want to like meet, I don't have time to meet with someone at a design center and go through all this stuff. It's just not the way I shop. And so for me, it was just sort of a frustration. And and I felt like, you know, if I felt it and a bunch of my friends had felt it, you know, I'm not that special. So there were probably other people that are feeling the pain too.
Yeah, there's a big difference though in feeling pain and then going out and solving the problem.
It's
and I'm intrigued.
True.
Yeah, I'm intrigued about this notion of, I mean, you only charge $79 for a base package.
Yeah.
And then still your high-end package is only $199.
Sure.
And so it occurred to me that you're really not taking customers from the existing market. You've really perhaps created a whole new market.
That's kind of the approach that we've been taking. Again, it's not like we're, I mean, I don't think any traditional interior designer finds us particularly threatening because these are not customers they'd normally go for anyway.
Yeah.
In fact, many of them are really supportive. So we have a couple of investors that are traditional interior designers. In fact, the wife of one of my board members is a very high-end interior designer. You know, I think for them, it's actually kind of a cool thing because it gets people into the funnel, right? At an earlier age, potentially at a lower
yeah,
price segment.
If you're getting a 28-year-old or a 30-year-old person now when they're 40 or 50, they have 10 times the amount of cash.
Yeah, and maybe it just gets them like accustomed to this idea of doing interior design. And so I think for them, you know, it's kind of like hopefully expanding kind of the conversation around interior design.
Now, I haven't seen advertising on your website. I haven't seen paint companies or anybody. Is that, you know, I would think that as you start building that marketplace, maybe that starts to happen. Do you want that?
I mean, I think we're really careful about the customer experience. And I want, you know, to some degree, as a young company, one of the things that we want to be sort of true to is we're trying to provide a really awesome experience where you as the customer aren't questioning where our motivations are.
Yeah, yeah.
Although there are, you know, look, we also exist to make money. And so, you know, certainly we work with companies that pay us more money or, you know, things of that nature. But we try and do the right thing for the customer. I truly believe that's the right way to grow a consumer business.
Yeah. I especially one that relies on a high number of low price customers.
Yeah.
You're going to have to generate some kind of spin, a lot of attention and so forth. And so your integrity, I think, has to stimulate that.
I think that's right. I mean, it's one of the reasons I like consumers so much. I think, you know, there's such an alignment between doing the right thing for your customer and growing the business. And that feels like really good to me, you know?
Well, you've developed some pretty interesting artificial intelligence. I mean, the AI in your site seems pretty natural and it seems pretty well developed. Is it?
Yeah. I mean, look, like, I think we've got a long way to go. And not just us, I think just the industry in general has a long way to go into developing sort of, you know, data-based approaches to understanding your style and what that means sort of down the pipe. But we've come, I mean, even if you look back, we're about 3 years old or almost four, I suppose. I mean, we've come a long way. And,
well, clunky,
you know,
AI is really not very useful. And it doesn't create a good experience at all.
Yeah, and that's true. And I think, you know, one of the things that we think about a lot is where should we apply this? You know, what's the right way of taking some of these models that we've built and applying them to either customer needs or customer behaviors?
Yeah, hey, listeners, I'll remind you that you are listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Lee Mayer of online interior design site Havenly. So let's talk shifting gears now because you're up and running. Yeah. Let's talk about that process. When you started, I mean, you partnered with your sister were collaborative with your sister. Yeah. And you said that you aggressively sought feedback on the first version of your software. So what does aggressively mean? And how did customers feel about that?
Yeah, aggressively I think means like listened. I come across so many earlier stage entrepreneurs that when you give them feedback, they kind of don't listen. There's like and there's a natural defensiveness. This is your idea. This is your baby. Like you don't want it. Yeah, you know, you don't want to hear that it might not work in the way that you think it's going to work. And even now I still have that gut reaction, right? Like, oh, well, but that's not it. You know, customers are customers. I'm privileged to have them and I have to listen to what they want. And so when I say aggressively seek feedback, it typically means like, go out, get a lot of it. And just don't go out to your mom because your mom's going to be biased, right? Yep, your best friend's biased. Mm-hmm. Go out to people that don't know you and ask them for advice, feedback. And most importantly, this is like critical. A lot of people miss this. See if they'll be willing to open their wallet for you. Mm-hmm. So it's when the rubber meets the road. Like that's like, will they be willing to pay for this product?
Well, but if your first product isn't anywhere close to what your reiterated product is going to be, how do you correlate whether they'll pay?
It's tough. And I think, you know, part of it is whether you will pay and what you will pay are two very different things. So typically, the harder part when you're first starting a company, in my opinion, is just whether they will pay. Yeah. Will they even bother to reach into their wallet and pull out $5 for you? Yep. And that, I think, is like the first question. The second question is how much they will pay, of course.
Yeah, I developed a failed app, which I'm not proud of. But I talked with some of my customers, and this guy goes, oh my God, this is such an awesome app. I'd pay real money for that. I'm like, well, how much is real money? He goes like, $1.99.
Yeah. You know, like people, I mean, I so many of us, when I like see an app that costs money, I think, you know, and it's 99 cents. I can afford 99 cents. I'm an entrepreneur, but I still can afford 99 cents. Yeah. But I think twice about it. And I think that that's, you know, that's something that you really need to figure out. And so I always recommend like do something lean, figure out if there's value, listen to feedback, and like really listen.
Yeah. You know? So now after you really listened, you created a version 2, which you probably thought was everything you ever wanted. Right? How close was it?
It wasn't that close. Even now, I mean, to be perfectly honest, now I feel like we're so far away from where the ultimate vision is. And that's like a constant frustration. And, you know, for me as an entrepreneur, but also like a level of excitement that there's still, you know, so far to go.
Well, and, you know, speaking of that, I want to ask you about some of the things that you've been quoted as saying. But first, you did as far as running a startup, and I'm going to let Luke know we're going to play a clip in a minute. But you said in an interview with Lily Herman of Her Campus that the nature of growing a business is imperfection.
Yeah.
So that you have to have a team of problem solvers. One of my favorite authors is Ben Horowitz, and you and I mentioned that you both are fans of his, right?
Yeah.
He wrote a book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. I've got a great clip. Luke, would you play that, please?
Why are none of the management books that I'm reading helping me? Like, they are no help at all. And I read literally every management book. And, you know, I realized that, you know, management books are generally written for, like, here's how you to not screw up your company. But if you start a company, that lasts like a week. And then you've screwed it up. And then, like, where's the book for that?
So I love that clip. What's your take of that?
I mean, he's right, right? Like, I think it's too much to expect any new company to not make mistakes. I think the crucial question isn't whether or not you'll make mistakes, because you will make mistakes. I think the crucial question is how you recover from them and learn from them. And that sounds like a cliche, but it's actually true.
Yeah.
And so I encourage my people, you know, sometimes, particularly when you get people from big companies that join Havenly, one of the first things I tell them is, don't be perfect. Don't present to me. Just come in and have a conversation and we'll figure it out together, you know? And I think like that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, but as the CEO, people look at you and they expect you to have the answers, right?
Yeah, I talked to an investor once and he had this whole metaphor, and it's a little bit of a convoluted one, but ultimately his point is, what's interesting about the CEO is it's kind of like you're holding, like you're you know, on a dark city street, and you're holding the, this torch with the fire on it, mm-hmm. and, you know, but it's kind of behind you. So like everyone behind you sees the light, but you're kind of like still in this murky yeah. darkness, trying to figure out the path. And that's how I feel a lot of the time. You know, it's like, I have to do the best that I can to like illuminate the path behind me so that the folks that work for me and with me can sort of join me. But I'm constantly trying to make shapes out of darkness.
Yeah. So when you see these problems, and you see them and others see them, how much of the responsibility is yours to solve them versus the people behind you for whom you're illuminating the path?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it depends. You know, I certainly am, I think, a fairly hands-on CEO. I like to get into the weeds with things and I enjoy spending time with my team. Hopefully they enjoy spending time with me. That's a better question, actually, probably.
Well, there's some some fierce listening, or what was the term you used?
Aggressive feedback. Yeah. And so, you know, I think, look, at the end of the day, the buck does stop with me. You know, one of the scarier things about being a CEO is I kind of have no one else to blame. Now, a lot of things can go wrong. A lot of things can go right. But, it's kind of on my plate to some degree.
Yeah. I reflect back on the small company that I started and grew. And I had a strange and inappropriate sense of responsibility and the notion that I ought to know the answers, right?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm pretty clear that I don't know the answers, that I often have opinions, mm-hmm. but I don't always know the answers.
So what do you do to make sure your people realize that that's how you feel and that you really want their collaborative input?
Yeah. So we have, so it's actually interesting. One of the things that I tell people when they start working, particularly my direct reports, mm-hmm. Is I almost always have an opinion. How tightly I hold them is up to you to determine.
So
I'm always like, ask. Like, I, mm-hmm. you know, I will walk past your desk and I will be like, I don't like the pink, I like the blue. You know, mm-hmm. I'll just I toss out opinions because it's my job. But oftentimes, if you come to me and you say, look, Lee, you know, I know you like the blue, but here's why we chose the pink, I'd be mm-hmm. like, cool.
Yep. yep. And so creating that expectation, right? But then you have to live up to it.
And the communication around it, mm-hmm. right? So, we developed some shorthand within the company around, like, there are some things that I really care about. And you probably won't talk me off of those ledges. Mm-hmm. But hopefully they're pretty few and far between.
Do you have a way to communicate that?
Yeah,
that
so I grade them. So A, B, C, D. So, you know, I don't use it always. But sometimes mm-hmm. I'll say something like, it's an A issue for me. And that's mm-hmm. like, you're not arguing with me.
Yeah.
And then there are things where I'm like, eh, it's a D issue.
Yeah.
Really, I just kind of, why am I in the room? Go do.
Cool. Well, now you also talked about, in another interview, there's an article by a woman named Gigi Sukin at mm-hmm. Colorado Biz. And you talked about recognition of this dark side of entrepreneurship. Yeah. What's that about? That sounds kind of
ominous. It does a little bit. Yeah. I think it's probably, it's a little bit more about, actually, the loneliness I was just talking about with interior design, maybe mm-hmm. I was projecting, because there's certainly a lot of loneliness around being a CEO.
Yeah.
When you naturally sort of carry this expectation of great success on your shoulders, mm-hmm. it can be really, really difficult.
When you've got investors giving you, say, a total of $25 million.
Yeah.
Does that put some weight there too?
It does. I mean, it's other people's money. I tend to get... you know, it's funny. I get more uncomfortable the more public accolades come in. And that includes money. So money is like probably the most, investor money is the most public place mm-hmm. Where you can sort of gauge the success or failure of a company. And, you know, I find it, the days that we announce funding, I often find myself in a really like not happy place. Mm. Not because I think we're doing a bad thing, not because I don't think we have like an incredible business ahead of us, but there's like dissonance between all these congratulations, like these congratulatory messages rolling in and the weight of, you know, an extra $15 million that I have to now turn around and provide a return on.
So where others see just awesomeness, you feel pressure.
I feel pressure. And, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Don't your investors kind of want you to?
I think they do. I have very supportive investors and board members I think they're glad that to some degree I feel a real level of responsibility to do the right things.
They probably don't want to picture you rolling in their cash, do they?
Yeah, although that would be fun if uncomfortable.
So, you know, what do you think has attracted all that money to Havenly?
I think a couple of things. So first, I think we're in a really big space and we're doing pretty well with it, right? You know, are we assured success? No. But I think with like really solid execution, mm-hmm. we can get to a really great outcome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the further you get, the more, you know, certainty, I suppose, you know, there yeah. is around that.
But it's hard to make money at $99 that are 197. Mm-hmm. Even if you're selling products, it's mm-hmm. hard to make money.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we spend a lot of time obviously trying to figure out how to do so and grow yep. the business and get customers in the door in an, you know, an economically feasible fashion. But, you know, yeah, it's this stuff isn't easy, right?
Yeah.
thing about hard things.
That's right. That is a great book. For listeners, if you haven't read it, it really is sort yeah. of a seminal book on what the real life of entrepreneurship is about. You're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Taver. I'm speaking with Lee Mayer, co-founder and CEO of Havenly. Please visit ProCo360.com where you can subscribe to my newsletter. It has news about upcoming episodes. It has my blog, which is short and it does get you thinking, and books I'm listening to on Audible. Again, that's ProCo360.com. I hope you're enjoying this episode with Lee Mayer and I hope that you'll share it with friends. Let's talk about a little bit about your views on entrepreneurism. A couple of things I wanted to ask you about. Last year, you directed Havenly to separate from a venture capital firm called Binary Capital because of a sexual harassment controversy involving its leaders. You know, in the context of that, and maybe even more broadly, what do you think men should know about the world of entrepreneurship for a woman?
So I have to tell you, I was sitting across from my COO and co-founder, Jesse, when I got this list of questions. And I was like, Jesse, what do you think men should know about entrepreneurship, about women? She's like, that we will beat you. And it's true. You know, women, female-run companies tend to have bigger and better exits and typically as a class actually outperform their male peers.
Wow. I did not know that.
And that is something that, like, I think, you know, so often we think about sort of the negative sides of being a female entrepreneur. And I think that is one of the things that potentially we should highlight more. Like, women crush it. And we do it in the face of, you know, a decent amount of adversity. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world to raise capital as a woman. It's certainly not the easiest thing in the world to like walk into a room with men and ask for millions of dollars.
So why, if the statistics bear mm-hmm. out that women-run companies
yeah.
have better outcomes, why is it hard? You'd think that men yeah. would start throwing more money at
yeah.
you.
Well, you know, I think part of it, you know, the argument around some of this is like, maybe it's a little bit of selection bias. In other words, the women that succeed are sort of,
potential, yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. overcoming a larger proportion of difficulty. Honestly, I don't know. well, I have my theories. I think it's a field that typically has been dominated by men. There are certainly far more male entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and male CEOs of tech companies than there are females. Yeah. There are certainly far more male investors than there are female investors. And people tend to invite naturally in a fairly qualitative world like this. Mm-hmm. So the world of venture investing is particularly in the earlier stages, very subjective. You tend to kind of go towards either people you know, mm-hmm. people like you,
mm-hmm.
or people you've seen succeed in the past.
Yeah.
And because so much of this is male dominated, it sort of naturally hews towards a male
yeah.
bias.
So I have a theory.
Yeah.
Maybe off base
yeah.
entirely. But I as the millennial workforce has changed, some people complain that they don't work as hard. And I don't believe that. I think they need to work for an organization that they feel connected with, that they feel has purpose, and where their work has purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes women are better at leading with that approach to life than men. And
yeah.
maybe that's why in today's world, there's a shift in who's succeeding.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think it's hard, right? Women are 51% of the population. So it's hard to speak for all women and whether or not they're better or worse at things.
Mm-hmm.
I do think...
Do I need to edit that out?
No, you're totally... No, not at all. But I think there's the world is changing a little bit. And I think, you know, the slow progress towards equality, whether it's gender or race or other things, I think is a good thing. And I'm, you know, sort of excited to see where it leads.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, let's talk about this notion of being an entrepreneur in Colorado.
Yeah.
And some say that people in Colorado, you know, value this work-life balance in such a way that they just don't work as hard maybe as their peers in San Francisco. I mean, what's your take on Colorado as a home for fast-paced startups?
I mean, so, you know, I speak about this quite a bit. I think it's a fantastic place to live. I think I'm, you know, I'm glad I'm here and I'm proud to be a part of the community. That being said, I think that's true. I think people here oftentimes move here for lifestyle reasons. The culture isn't as steeped in the fast-paced, grow, we're going to make something great out of this yet. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I'd love to see is more and more people sort of understand the world of equity. So one of the things that I've started to notice is in California, if I were to give you, say, a percentage of my company, you would be so focused, because that's like really a lot of your comp, or it could be a lot of your comp. Yep. And so you're so focused on making that piece of your comp worth a lot of money that that becomes like a real motivating factor for you.
Yeah.
And I think here, because we haven't had so many rich exits, you just haven't had, I mean, I think one
there's
of
not
the, there's not a culture
around
it. Yeah. And you know, honestly, if you're a 26-year-old kid and you haven't found, you know, one out of two of your friends hasn't made $1 million on a company, like it's harder to sort of internalize what that could be for you.
So it's a cultural thing that has to evolve.
I think it does.
So what's the value? You know, one of the things I hear about a startup in Colorado is the collaborative nature that is useful. Is there some offset there? Because I've also heard that like in San Francisco, where maybe there's tons of money, you don't have that collaborative support. Where's the, is there an offset?
I think there, you know, I don't know how much it offsets. I don't, you know, I think one of the difficult pieces is you don't really know the counterfactual here, but certainly the, you know, you mentioned in your intro, I think doing business here is incredibly special. I enjoy it. You know, I like it a lot. I think you're always, you know, one, two, maybe phone calls away from meeting whoever you need to meet. And everyone's incredibly helpful. And so, you know, I think the question for me is, I'd love to see more sort of awareness, a little bit more of this sort of, can we become the real the real tech hub, next tech hub of the country?
Can we do both? Can we
and maintain it, right? So that, I mean, I think that would be a really special place to be.
Yeah. I think ultimately that there is an aspirational brand there for Colorado.
Sure.
And I think we're heading in that direction. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's a group of folks, business leaders here are putting together an initiative called Pivot to Colorado. And the whole idea is, you know, we've always marketed Colorado as this place where you can like go and ski and have a great lifestyle. But can we market it also as a place where you can really, really, you know, make a great career decision and grow your career and, you know, do really incredible things on the professional side too, maybe attracting more people that are sort of willing to put in the work.
What's your sense? Can that happen?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I'm betting
on
it.
You're not committal, but you are supportive of the notion,
right? I am very highly supportive,
cool.
Selfishly, but also excited about the town.
Well, this has been a fun conversation. I want to wrap up with, I mean, you've talked about the challenges, you know, tough times, certainly highs and lows. What's your take, retroactive, sort of looking back on this whole Havenly ride?
Gosh, I mean, I think it's the best thing I've ever done. It has grown me professionally and personally in ways that I probably couldn't have imagined a few years ago when I started this. And, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah. Oh, it has costs.
It has a lot of costs, most specifically in salary. But yes, it has a lot of costs.
Well, we hope that's temporary, right?
We hope it's very temporary. But, you know, look, I'm working a lot. I work a lot. I've given up relationships. I've given up time with friends and family members. It's not the easiest thing in the world.
Do they understand? They say they do, don't they?
No, not
all
of them.
No, they don't even say they do.
Some of them don't. No, I mean, not everyone does, because you, unless you're really in it, you kind of don't understand the I mean, I don't sleep. I don't think I've like fully slept a night in a really long time.
I slept a lot of nights on the floor in my office. You probably, I don't know, maybe you have a couch.
I have a couch.
You're better funded than I was.
I mean, you know, and now we're sort of at a place where I have a team and that's exciting and really nice, but it just raises the stakes a little bit.
Well, cool. I'm going to look forward to chapter two of our conversation sometime down the road.
I hope so.
But let's wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, I've been speaking with Lee Mayer, co-founder and CEO of Havenly. And Lee, it has been awesome talking with you about, we talked about Havenly and you know, how you've used technology, creativity, creating a space, a new space in the well-established market of interior design. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been awesome. This is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app and reviewing the show, and by subscribing to the ProCo 360 newsletter. Thanks again to show sponsors MicroStar Cake Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones and Keller, and to my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Search ProCo 360. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing.